The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We have been discussing on programs now for a couple of times, Big Bang, scientists' objections to it. We are now looking simply at some summary statements about that. Again, most of the ones I'm giving are from scientists who are not Bible believers, certainly not fundamentalists, but they are reasonable conclusions to the theories, which simply indicate that they're not certain. The theories are not certain. They are simply assumptions or speculations, educated guesses perhaps, but nothing more than that. And for lay people, meaning people who do not have training in science, to be bombarded constantly with all of the material that comes over the television and is in newspapers and magazines, after a while, you get a little punch drunk and begin to wonder, well, do I really have any sensible basis to disagree with all of this? And it is my hope that this program may help some of you reattain a sense of confidence in the trustworthiness of the Scripture. Now, on the last program, we were getting ready to look at some quotes by a man by the name of McCrae, and he wrote an article entitled Cosmology After Half a Century that was published in Science. And, by the way, for those of you that may not know, this magazine is a very well-known, popular treatment of science. It is not a technical journal in the sense that some magazines are. It is intended for a much more general audience, but it is certainly an acceptable magazine so far as presenting the views of science. And there are two or three comments here that I think would probably be helpful to us in the context that we've been dealing with. Quote, in 1873, J.C. Maxwell, James Clerk Maxwell, wrote, quote, "In the heavens we discover by their light stars so distant that no material thing can ever have passed from one to the other, one to another. And yet this light tells us that each of them is built up of molecules of the same kinds we find on Earth," end quote. Now, again, for those of you that listen regularly to the program, I want you to remember this, because we're going to go fairly quickly into a discussion of how atoms and molecules, how atomic particles, atoms, molecules, could possibly have come into existence by themselves. And there's another point to this right now, but at least remember the statement, because I think it will be helpful later. All he's saying is that we look around, we see all the light, we see the other stars, the spectrographic analysis that comes back from them, simply are showing us that the molecules there are just like the ones we have here. They are not creative. They don't. We don't have new elements being formed, new kinds of atomic structure, etc., etc. Now, quote, "No theory of evolution can be formed to account for the similarity of molecules." Let me interrupt the quote here. What we would expect would be, if some of you have a long memory, you may remember Julian Huxley's definition of evolution, where he said there are two primary directions. Evolution is supposed to produce new things constantly and go from simple to complex. So if evolution is in fact the way that our universe got here, we would expect some very creative kinds of matter, different kinds of molecules, different elements. And as these quotes are indicating, that simply is not what we see. No theory of evolution can be formed to account for the similarity of the molecules. On the other hand, the exact equality of each molecule to all others of the same kind gives it the essential character of its being eternal and self-existent, end quote. Now, I would take issue with the eternal. It's eternal in the sense that it is going to continue to exist unless it's unstable, but not eternal in the sense of having been around forever. But at least the observation is very interesting. We look at a molecule of water or benzene or pick one, whatever one you want to talk about, and they're never different. Have exactly the same number of atoms in them. they are arranged in exactly the same ways, which would suggest that their origin was not random and chaotic, but it was designed that way. It is consistent, accurate. And it is interesting to me to find a well-known scientist simply acknowledging that. Now, another quote. So far as we know, the result is still the same as Maxwell inferred. All electrons are everywhere the same. All protons the same, and so on. Now, let me interrupt the quote here. Electrons and protons, for those of you that may not know, if you've not had science, are simply considered to be the particles which make up atoms. And not only are the atoms and molecules the same, the particles that make them up, the protons, the neutrons, the electrons, these are all the same. No matter where you get an electron, where it's come from, it's the same as every other electron. And this is a point that, in my opinion, is very important because it gives us some information about the nature of the matter which makes up our universe. Now, let me go back and read the quote without any interruption. So far as we know, the result is still the same as Maxwell inferred. All electrons are everywhere the same, all protons the same, and so on. We should expect a sufficiently sophisticated theory to tell us why this is so, end quote. Now, that last comment is a prize winner because the fact of the matter is there is no theory that is capable of telling us in any respect why this is so. It would be desirable if that were the case, but the fact is they don't. In fact, the theories are all because they've rejected the idea of a designer, a creator. They're trying to come up with a process that would negate the necessity of a creator. And yet, the things that they're studying are identical with one another. And again, I would simply observe that this is inconstant, contradictory, not a legitimate conclusion based on the material that is actually being worked with. Now, what I would like us to do at this point is simply note a variety of comments having to do not with the universe now, not with the Big Bang particularly, but statements by scientists which deal with the origin of stars, the origin of galaxies, the origin of planets. May I make a comment here, particularly in recent months, we have been seeing a great rush of articles dealing with the notion that planets have been discovered elsewhere. As I've admitted to you before, I am not an astronomer. To the best of my knowledge, there have been no planets that have actually been discovered outside our solar system. Now, I have not read all of the articles that presumed to deal with planets that have been found elsewhere. I've read some of them, and I've also read the objections that astronomers are raising to those articles. So I'm willing still to make the comment. If I'm proved wrong, it won't be the first time. But right now, as far as my knowledge is concerned, I'm not aware of planets being discovered anywhere else. Now, if you wonder at the statement, stars, of course, are luminaries. They give off light, and what we're actually seeing when we look at stars is not the star itself, but we're simply seeing the light that's coming from the star. And these are unbelievable distances away. Millions, or presumably in some cases billions of light years. Now, bear in mind, please, that light years are not time designations. They are distances. A light year is simply the distance that light will travel in 1 year. It is something over 6 trillion miles, as I recall. So it's just a distance, that's all. Now, you have a campfire or a match or a flashlight. You look at it from a mile away, you can probably still see it. But you start looking at the light even of huge bodies that are unbelievable distances away, and they're only pinpricks, then how is it going to be possible for you to see much smaller bodies rotating around those stars or suns at that distance? That's the basic problem with trying to find planets elsewhere in the universe. I won't elaborate on that right now, but we'll look at some of these quotes, and some of them have to do with that. An article by a man by the name of Frank, F-R-E-N-K, Carlos Frank and Simon White, was published in Nature in October of 1985, and the article was entitled, More Missing Matter Mystery. Now, the article was basically responding to the problem of why we have a lumpy universe. Why after the Big Bang did not matter move out away from that center of the explosion smoothly, regularly, rather than being irregular as we see? This was the basic reason for the article. Quote, the missing mass and galaxy formation were the subject of two major conferences this summer. It may seem remarkable that a five-day symposium could be devoted to objects that have never been seen and whose mass is uncertain by 76 orders of magnitude, end quote. Now, this was a group of astronomers who got together, and this was after 5 days, this was the conclusion, the comment that this particular these two particular astronomers were making. Again, a statement, quote, planet-like objects are not excluded, but no good candidates have been found so far. Now, again, I've mentioned the recent publicity that has attended things, but at least at this, in 1984, this was the 1985, this was the comment. Now, let me get the last part of this quote in so we can get on to something else next program. Quote, the realization that we still do not know what makes up most of the universe has thrown astronomy off the track of normal science and into a crisis, end quote. That's a very interesting statement. Here is an astronomer after a five-day seminar admitting that the information given there simply makes, it reveals the fact that astronomers don't know what the makeup of the universe is. And it also revealed the fact that as far as these two gentlemen were concerned, there have been no planets discovered outside our own solar system.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.